Hi, this is Blake Morgan, and you're listening to Rod's Pulse Podcast.
Rod's Pulse Podcast number 52, Student Podcasting, and PodSafe, Blake Morgan.
This is Rod's Pulse Podcast, the podcast for faculty and students interested in learning how to use and create podcasts and other e-learning technologies. Welcome back.
Welcome back. How do you like my intro from Blake Morgan? I played one of his songs back in my podcast number 47. That was Maybe I'm Amazed, the cover song from, of course, Paul McCartney. It turned out to be a real hit for Blake Morgan. It topped the PodSafe Music Network charts and also the iTunes Music Store charts. So I'm really happy to share another song with you today. This one's called Why Don't You See? It's from his first CD, and it's featuring Lenny Kravitz, who he also has played with in the past. So stay tuned for the end of my podcast to hear the full song, Why Don't You See? By Blake Morgan. Because of my interview today, I'm going to not have news from the Podosphere other than to remind you that National Distance Learning Week is coming up. The events are beginning to be planned, and you'll be hearing more about that shortly on my next podcast. Remember, it's the week of November 12th, and be sure to take a look at the National Distance Learning Week website, and I have the URL on my show notes. I'm proud to have Illuminate as a sponsor of my podcast, so here's a word from my sponsor.
Brought to you in part by Illuminate, where bright ideas meet.
Amber, there must be a dozen web collaboration solutions for educators. How do I figure out which one to use?
Well, Gary, the great thing about Illuminate is that they offer a free 3-user VRoom.
Big deal. I can get a 15-day eval from any web conferencing vendor.
Illuminate VRoom is different. The great thing is that you can use your VRoom for as much as you want, as long as you like, no restrictions.
Well, if it's free, they must have yanked out a bunch of features.
No way, Gary. You can use whiteboard, application sharing, multi-point voiceover IP, PowerPoint presentations, video broadcasts, and more. The Illuminate people are so confident that you'll love it, they're giving it away. And even if you don't want to pay to upgrade to more than 3 simultaneous users, you can continue to use your free VRoom.
How do I sign up?
It's easy. Just visit getvroom.com/rodspulse. That's getvroom.com/rodspulse.
Okay, now for my main topic today. It's a continuation of podcasting's three realms, and where I give some commentary and discuss a white paper written by Ashley Deal, Carnegie Mellon University, called Podcasting, a Teaching and Technology White Paper. On podcast number 50, I covered the use of podcasts to archive lectures. And on number 51, I discussed using podcasts to build supplemental material. And today I'll be talking about having students do their own podcasts. And to really cover that topic, I'll be interviewing Dr. Liz Evans. She's the Natural Sciences Coordinator in the Department of Academic Computing at Swarthmore College here in Swarthmore, Pennsylvania. I discovered her interest in this by reading a paper that she co-authored called Using Student Podcasts in Literature Classes. So here we go. Without further ado, let me play the interview I did with Liz Evans. I just want to apologize for the recording, however. For some reason, my voice was getting progressively delayed as the podcast went on, so I had to do a little more editing than I wanted to. So if you hear some choppy editing, it's because of a technical issue I was having with my Skype recording system. So I apologize for that, but otherwise, I think you'll enjoy the interview. So here we go. Liz, thanks for talking to me today. First, I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about your background and what you do at Swarthmore.
Well, my academic background is actually in research biology. I have a PhD in molecular genetics and cell biology. And so my path into educational technology is a little bit circuitous, but at one point I began working as a consultant with a company putting databases of biological and protein information online, and sort of one thing led to another, and I gradually moved more into the computing side. And that eventually brought me here to Swarthmore, where I am the natural sciences coordinator in the academic computing group. And that really encompasses a lot of things and changes day to day, but basically I'm a faculty liaison working with professors looking to incorporate technology in their teaching in the classroom, and one of my major responsibilities is actually a Blackboard administrator for Swarthmore, but we share our Blackboard system with Bryn Mawr and Haverford, so it's a little bit of a tri-college project in that sense.
You know, it's interesting because we have a similar history then, because I got into computing through my research in pharmacology. So I wanted to talk to you today about the paper I noticed that you published that talked about using student podcasts in literature classes. It intrigued me because in my podcast, I usually concentrate on talking to faculty about, you know, using podcasts in their teaching and adding supplementary content, you know, to the lecture material. So, and I have heard of examples of using podcasts as assignments. So why don't you give me a little background how that came about?
Yeah, well, that paper really grew directly from the interests and activities of one of our English professors, Peter Schmidt, and he had conceived of an assignment with his American literature class to have students do a pair of podcasts each where they would both do a short reading from a work of literature being studied in the course, and then along with that reading, record their own commentary. So similar to something you might have as an oral assignment in a class or even a written paper, but Peter has been interested in technology in various ways, and I think, you know, struck upon the idea that a podcast as a series would be a really interesting way to explore this assignment. And he had been able to work out a lot of the technology himself using GarageBand on the Mac and doing some recording. And so I think he had a pretty good idea of the way he wanted to run the assignment in the course. And he had turned to our IT department here at Swarthmore to get a little bit of advice on that and basically work out a way that we could support a fairly large class. There were about 50 students in the class. And so he wanted to have the recording component relatively straightforward and easy for them to do on their own, not necessarily, you know, coming together in a workshop setting or any kind of class, but just with some clear instructions so that they could record either on a Mac or on a PC, using GarageBand if they had it, or using Audacity if they were just looking to pick up something something for free. And so collaborating with Peter, then we drew up some guidelines and then he ran that. And that was, let's see, about a year and a half ago was the first experiment that he did with that. And then writing up those experiences really resulted in that submission to the Academic Commons publication there. And his presentations actually inspired a few other of our faculty to maybe adjust the assignment a little bit, but get students involved in creating their own podcasts.
If others are planning to use that. And you answered part of my one of the questions I had, which was, you know, how do you manage the mechanics of having 50 students all do a podcast? So were they given, you know, a significant period of time to learn it on their own and to work this out? Or did you give any tutorials to them how to do it, or how did that work?
In the case of Peter's courses, not directly. I think he did some introduction in his courses, just general guideline of what the expectations of the assignments were, and then the students worked over the course of the semester, and only one or two would be doing a podcast in any particular week, but they built up a whole body of work that was released as a series with RSS. So I think that he found that some of the students were very self-contained. They already had something set up on their computer for recording for other reasons, or they were familiar with some of the editing programs, and some of the students actually helped other students just directly one-on-one to get started. Some of the students did take advantage of the resources that we have here in ITS. We do have some stations with headsets and editing and recording software, and so some students would come in for help, but we didn't really have anything formal, and I think that was the hope, that the students would be able to pick it up on their own for the most part, and I think that really did hold true just in some of the conversations that I've had with Peter and a couple other people doing similar kinds of things. Most students are fairly fine once they get over the hump of just getting started. Mm-hmm. They learn how to work with the software and get their recordings posted, and you know, one or two students run into technical problems, but then they can get the help that they need.
Any software, so your Blackboard school, I know, do you have any software that on your Blackboard system that enables podcasting, or is this all sort of just upload files and, you know, hand code RSS feeds, or how do you implement that piece?
Yeah, that has been a little bit of this and a little bit of that as well. Most of the podcasts for courses have actually been hosted on our Tiger server, which has a built-in web log, basically, that creates the RSS and gives a nice web page, too. There are a couple of other options. We do have an iTunes U site and OneClass. To some extent, that's used for audio reserves and posting things for students to listen to for their courses. But OneClass has used it to actually post their own podcasts as well. We do use Blackboard and actually have the learning objects packet, the campus pack, which does include a podcasting component. And so far, I don't think anyone's taken that up as their way of doing it, but I think it sort of suits a niche because it is a way to kind of have the podcast subscription idea, but also keep it within the context of the course. So I'll be interested to see if anyone ends up using that.
Obviously, assignment could be, like you said, a writing assignment or maybe speaking to the class. Was there anything that you think he hoped to get out of podcasting that he could have done other ways? Or was it just a novelty, or was there something that podcasting would bring to the learning experience?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and it certainly comes up. I think that there have been ways that, you know, audio recording and posting things to the web or to Blackboard have already been going on lots of places, and certainly here at Swarthmore, the language programs have already incorporated recording quite extensively. So I think that the interest in podcasts, partly, you know, originally in that sense, again, as Peter Schmidt came up with this idea in the assignment, I think, you know, was intrigued by the kind of subscription concept of podcasting and as a delivery mode, and matched that up, I think, with the recognition that for students, and this was true in the case of the podcast hosted on the Tiger server, but also from iTunes U, that they are familiar working with a program, something like iTunes, and it just makes it very easy for them to have things show up automatically. So it was that little extra step of automation that, that made the podcast appealing.
Did they seem to get a lot out of it? Did they like it?
Yeah, I think they did. Again, you know, I think one or two that ran into technical difficulties, of course, you know, we all know how frustrating that can be when you're, you know, trying to complete an assignment and just for one reason or another, things go wrong. So there were some frustrations, but I think by and large, both from Peter and a couple of the other faculty members who've tried similar things, if the assignment really matched the kind of discussions that they were having in class, it actually provided food for thought. The students would be able to listen to the other students' podcasts in advance and come to class, you know, already with some ideas or some discussion that had been underway. And there was a classics professor that had some students doing Latin and Greek, a film and media studies professor, and also one of the professors in art history had students do something like a museum guide. As you know, if you go to the Metropolitan Museum or something, you can rent little things that are guides, and so assignments sort of along those same lines.
Someone that's used podcasting assignments for students said that it really excites the students because they, you know, it's an outlet for their creativity. They can and the fact that you know their fellow students and friends and maybe their parents, you know, can actually you know, hear and maybe see if it's a video podcast, something that they've created on the web, that really turns on the students.
Yeah, I think that's right. And in some ways, there are other outlets that are mm-hmm. along the same lines. If students are creating videos for YouTube or posting things to their Facebook accounts. And so the idea so-called user-generated content is not that foreign to a lot of the students. And
do you find it that the faculty come to you, or is this something that's an uphill battle with introducing new educational technology to your faculty?
That is a great question. I think that in some senses, some of the things that have taken off have been ideas that faculty have had, and we've been able to work with them to, you know, sort of pull it off. I'm always searching and would love to find a way to make some of these ideas more accessible or more just in the forefront for other faculty. We've held workshops, which there's been some attendance, but I'm not sure that it's necessarily led to new projects that weren't already underway. And, you know, individual conversations can sometimes spark things, but always searching for that way to make the ideas accessible and available enough that if people wanted to start something up, that the barrier to getting going would be relatively low. So we've expanded a little bit from the ways that we tried to set up the support, both by having instructions available on the web, and then we've actually tried to set up our audio capture stations in the libraries where students are working and make it easy for them to be able to have almost like a sound booth, a little practice room or recording room where they can work and make it easy. So we'll see how it goes.
Are there lecture halls where you automatically capture the whole classroom experience? Do you use any of the other products that are out there?
Yeah, we don't have any of the sort of system or whole system type products that do that, and I don't think that there's been a lot of interest here at a small liberal arts college for the kind of automated lecture recording and podcasting. And several events or several of the lecture halls are set up for recording, and we have a very active media services team that will record audio or video for any lecture or events that go on. So usually those things are kind of arranged in advance if it's going to happen.
Media like podcasting on the side to enhance their course content?
Yeah, I don't think it would be a very large number. I think that, again, in the languages where there's so much conversation and spoken word going on, that both the faculty are presenting pre-recorded content as well as having students doing content. And then in the other disciplines, it's, you know, just a sprinkling in the various divisions. And so I don't know how we would compare to, you know, larger universities or other types of universities.
Thanks again, Liz.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, there's that abrupt ending I was talking about. I want to thank Liz Evans for her time and information about student podcasting. And I guess that's all I have for today. So until next time, have a great week.
Please leave odd feedback at 610-616-2199.
Can't come That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Please don't forget to leave Rod feedback. You can go to www.rodspulsepodcast.com and leave comments on his blog. You can send feedback to his email address, rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. You can also send audio feedback by calling into his comment line at 610-616-2199. Till next time, have a great week.
The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Merry, and does not represent the official viewpoint of Thomas Jefferson University, or any other institution or company.